Hello and welcome to Symphonies and Snacks, a podcast where we discuss contemporary classical music and pun-based snacks. That was part of Trevor Wishart's Red Bird, A Political Prisoner's Dream, written between 1973 and 1977. And with me this week, I have Rosie Fletcher, who is currently studying for her Master's in Children's Literature, and she's one half of Rosie and Jessica's Day of Fun, which is another podcast.
That is true.
Yeah.
These are both facts.
I'm good on the facts.
Yeah.
So last week with Anna, I tried out a questionnaire for my guests, which is something that Adam and Joe do, and I've just nicked it, because if it's good enough for Adam and Joe...
Well, exactly. They have their bar... high, so why not try and reach that bar? That's not really how that metaphor works, but we'll run with it.
Yeah, we'll go with that.
Not into the bar.
Oh, that would be painful.
Oof, a man walks into a bar. Ouch.
Great joke.
Already with the puns, and we're not even at that segment yet.
Yay. As of last week, I haven't written down any of the questions, so
okay.
we're going to go for it. Same as last week, what is your best public transport anecdote? Best thing you've seen on public transport?
Ooh. Do you know what's really tragic is that lots of things I'm thinking of, I know I didn't experience, but I've seen on BuzzFeed articles. The one I can think of probably isn't that funny to anyone else, but has become a running family joke, which is that once I was trying to get into one of the lifts at Covent Garden's tube station, and I had in the end of... I had in my bag the end of a packet of Jaffa cakes that I had taken with me as a snack, and I ran to get into the lift, and the lift doors closed and nearly caught my bag, and I had to nearly say to the person next to me, "Oh, that just squished my Jaffa cakes." But I thought "squished my Jaffa cakes" sounded like some horrendous euphemism, so I didn't, so I just started laughing instead, which was probably worse.
I like it.
So, and now my sister and I refer to Jaffa cake squishing fairly regularly.
That's good work. if you were in a film, what genre of film would it be?
Yes, it's not a genre, but it's sort of a genre, and it's more aspirational. I don't think my life actually reflects it, but I would very much like to be in a Wes Anderson film, please.
Oh, that'd be nice. It would all...
Yeah, I think it'd be lovely. Everything would be neatly centred. We'd all be very well dressed. All my intellectual friends would be there. The soundtrack would be good.
It would all look vaguely Instagrammed.
Yes. Oh, please, I'd love that so much.
Question number three. Mm-hmm. Hang on, three. Cake or death?
Yeah, cake.
Yep. Anna didn't know what that was.
No, he said cake. Cake, cake.
We're out of cake, so my choice is or death. question number four. This is a new one for the week. What was your favourite hymn at school?
Oh, well, I mean, I don't think it's really a hymn, because hymns are good, but I went to a slightly happy-clappy Church of England primary school, and the best song we sang in praise assembly was "Prayer is Like a Telephone."
Oh my God, that's amazing.
Are you familiar with its work?
Well, I went to a Catholic school, so... We didn't do that one.
See, I then went to a Catholic school and we all got our hymn book, and there was a much better one, which I can't remember the title of, but the chorus goes, "He sent us to give the good news to the poor, tell prisoners that there are prisons no more, tell blind people that they can see, and set the downtrodden free."
And go
lovely.
Tell everyone.
The news of the kingdom of God has... Exactly.
That one.
Now, prayer is like a telephone. Well, it has actions, which is not going to translate well to this audio podcast. But Lucy, you're on Skype, so you can enjoy this, which is... "Prayer is like a telephone for us to talk to Jesus. Prayer is like a telephone for us to talk to God. Prayer is like a telephone for us to talk to Jesus. Pick it up and use it every day."
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
And people wonder why I'm no longer a woman of faith.
My favourite was "If I Were a Butterfly," but it's purely because it's got a line, which is, "If I were a fuzzy wuzzy bear, I thank you, Lord, for my fuzzy wuzzy hair."
Yeah! See, there are actually songs I really like. Like, I really like "Autumn Days" and "The Grass is Jewelled" and "The Silk Inside the Chestnut Shell," "Jet Planes." I know a lot of the lyrics, more so than I think I do when I start, but "Prayer is Like a Telephone." I feel much like that Catholic hymn, it makes me want to share with the world, because why on earth is that a song?
Yeah. Just nowhere to go from that. Question five is, and this is my vaguely sensible one in my questionnaire, which is a piece of music that had a strong impact on you growing up.
Oh, a single piece of music that had a strong impact.
Yeah, one that you have really strong memories of.
Oh, what was my favourite song? Probably up till the age of about 10. I mean, I still really like it, but it was before I discovered music. So I suppose, and I did that in two waves, because I sort of found S Club 7, and then about 4 or 5 years later, I found The Enemy.
Yeah, I think I did
but
the same.
It's a song called Changing Your Demeanour by the folk band The Chieftains, and it's very, very jaunty and very lovely and fun, and there's a bit about a horse race in it. And when we went on holiday, my dad used to make cassette tapes for us, mixtapes for the journey, and we would all get a mixture of songs, and I would always make sure that that was on there.
That's really prepared. My dad used to buy one tape for the holiday, so every holiday was themed around a different tape that he'd bought.
Oh wow, so you have the holiday that was REM's Automatic for the People on a loop or something. Like, I say that because REM ended up on a lot of those tapes that we had on holiday.
Well, we had like the ABBA holiday, and we had the Elvis holiday.
Okay. Oh, good. Strong choices there.
Yeah, but it's, you know, just on a loop. Cool. Well, I feel our listeners have got to know you somewhat.
Yes.
Through that.
They've heard my beautiful singing voice. They know not to trust me on tubes. It's all great.
I just need to do a quick correction from the last show. As people know, I was a bit scatty, a bit poisoned, for want of a better thing.
I believe you were possibly suffering from carbon monoxide poisoning, so the fact that you managed to record at all is a very good sign.
It was probably foolish that I chose to. But just a quick correction, I said Pierre Boulez's birthday was the 23rd of March. It was actually the 26th of March, so happy birthday, Boulez, for the 26th. I'm not sure he would care.
That's lovely. I didn't know what the correction was going to be, and I like that you are precise enough to make sure you got the birthday right. I thought it was going to be something sort of catastrophically large.
No, just but great. Les's birthday.
Yeah.
So this week we are doing Trevor Wishart's Redbird, A Political Prisoner's Dream, which I chose for you because we had a text conversation about Music Concrète last week.
Yes.
So Music Concrète is music where all of the sound comes from a natural source and has been manipulated electronically. That's what that is. It was right at the complete origins of it is work by Karlheinz Stockhausen, who is one of my favourite nutters of a composer. And Trevor is one of the main people working in this in the UK. Another great link for you is he wrote this while he was at York University.
What a cracking university for a person to go to. Only the best people go there. And Durham, of course, am I right?
And he was composer in residence at Durham when I was there.
Oh, wow.
I think he might still have a residency there. So I was lucky enough to be taught by Trevor, but he seems to have residencies everywhere. He's just really good at finding them. So he's at Oxford, Durham, York. He's been in Canada, just...
This is some sort of nomadic musician in residence. He just pops up.
Pops up, teaches people his very specific software that he wrote. Yeah.
Is it proprietary? Because that's quite a good way of raking in the cash for all of your travelling.
Do you know, it's actually really, really cheap, actually. I think my student copy
that's
was
good of him.
40 quid, I think.
Oh, that's, I mean, the amount one can spend on music software.
Hundreds. Yeah. So... That's, yeah, and his is called Soundloom, and it's mad because it's been written in a way that he understands, and then he teaches it to you, and it's like, oh no, you want the thing that's in this place.
So not only does he have to teach you the program, he has to teach you to think the way he does so that it's able to be used.
Yeah, so you sit there looking at this software going, if I were Trevor, where would I have put this? But it's incredibly powerful, and I still use it now for all my work, because it's just, well, I would say Soundloom is one of the best out there because it doesn't use presets.
Okay.
So normally you put a template over something, but that kind of limits you in what you actually have available because you have all the because everyone else is using the same templates, but his you can go right into the wave of the sound and change it. But this was written before that software was available, because it was 1973 to 1977. That's a long time on One Piece.
But I suppose computers then were those big things you had to have a whole room for, so you couldn't be making your own programs.
Like in the Italian job.
Yeah.
You know, when they had, yeah, just to control the traffic lights. Yeah. So this was all done on tape.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay. My respect for it has grown hearing that.
So let's go first impressions. What do you think of it? It's tough.
You know, the thing is, I now know that you know this man, so I feel a desperate need to couch what I was going to say.
No, go
for
it.
My initial impression, and I mean within the first 40 seconds, was that I truly despised it, and I thought you were maybe trying to tell me something about your feelings towards me. As time went on, because it's about 45 minutes over, there are two acts. Oh yes, I've listened to it all. As it went on, my initial hatred lessened as I sort of realised that it was on such a different plane to what I usually listen to. I couldn't value judge it.
Yeah.
If that's so, initially I thought, this isn't music. I know what music is. You can hum music. I can't hum this. So my first thing was a kind of shock and revulsion.
Yeah.
And that's not to say I like it as it went on, but I adjusted to it, shall we say.
Yeah, it's a different way of listening to listen to this kind of work.
Yes.
I should say as well, it wasn't the original piece that we were going to do. The original piece was a later one by Trevor called The Encounters in the Republic of Heaven. But this pioneer of digital music only has his music available on CD.
Cracking.
So I couldn't get The Encounters in Republic of Heaven. I ordered it a week ago. It's been dispatched today from Devon. So,
well, maybe you can have me back on a later episode. Or you could make somebody else listen to it.
Well, that one's...
Has it got a tune? Lyrics?
It's
kind of snazzy beat?
It's not that kind of thing, but it was done by interviewing people in the Northeast. So he just went around and had chats with people.
Okay.
And because it's a very melodic accent, the material created from it is quite melodic.
Okay.
Because, you know, kind of a Geordie lilt gives you stuff to work with there. But this one is slightly more challenging. But I think it's because it was right at the beginning of when this stuff was really being developed.
Yeah, and I suppose that if it's at the beginning and you want to see how far you can push it...
Yeah.
Then you would end up with this.
It's the original source material. He's got this real economies of means approach of keeping your source material as small as possible and trying to get all your material from very little.
Oh, wow. Okay, that's very interesting, because I'm... Obviously, it's very different, but yes. I'm familiar with things with, like... I want to bring in the Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt theme tune here.
Go for it.
The sort of auto-tuning, playing around, editing speech so that it becomes rhythmic in a way, like a song lyric.
Yeah.
But obviously to do that, you need quite vast amounts of material to edit down so that you can find sentences that end with rhymes or things where you can play around with it more. So it's interesting that he obviously, by limiting that, he has to work a lot harder, but can probably get definitely does get a lot more interesting stuff out of it.
Yeah. And when he teaches, he's very keen on, he sends you away to record some source material. And if you go with something really big, he kind of goes to you, that's going to give you a lot of options. It's going to give you
That's true.
A lot to work with. And
whereas if you just have, say, one sentence, you can do a lot with it, but you know where to begin, because you have to begin somewhere in this short little clip.
Yeah, and he's also very keen on, he doesn't start with, I want it to sound like X, Y, and Z. He runs all the processes and then sees what he's got. So he lets the material dictate how the end result sounds.
Okay.
Within reason. you know, you can play about with that, you can cheat.
Yeah.
But by and large, it's about seeing how far that material can go. He also gave great advice on source material. Like, there's no point recording things frying. No, there's no point recording rain on a roof because it just sounds like frying bacon.
Which is bad to some people, but I frankly would quite like to listen to the sound of frying bacon from my meaty mixtape. So, track two, bacon. So I would enjoy that.
That was some of my best advice. Just don't try recording rain.
Don't record rain. Or, if it's not raining and you need rain, just get the frying pan on and tell everyone it's rain.
Yeah. And then another one was about flies, because there's one of the sounds later on, I can't remember at which point, I think it was about...
There is a fly, and I recently watched The Sound of Song with Neil Brand on BBC Four, and they were talking about listening to things properly, and I made sure I listened on headphones, which was good, because it's all in stereo.
Yeah.
When the fly appeared, it was conceivably the most frustrating thing I've ever listened to, because it was... I briefly thought there was a fly in the room, and that I was going to have to pause and try and free/eliminate this fly, and then I realised it was part of the recording. And it's a very effective way of getting a visceral reaction from your listeners, because I just... Oh, and it was buzzing around, and you could hear it moving across the... Oh, goodness...
Yeah. Also, he said something, like, in one seminar, he said about flies, and he's like, the thing that makes it sound like a fly isn't the buzzing sound, it's the way it moves.
Yeah.
So you have to pan it
properly.
It
was very effective. Yes, and it was all fully panned, because it wasn't just left and right. I could feel. I know I couldn't feel it, but it was moving up and down behind my head.
Do you think
that... Which is an amazing talent. To be able to make people know that there is a fly and be able to position it that doesn't exist.
Do you think that relates to... Because the subtitle of this is A Political Prisoner's Dream.
Yes.
Do you think this all relates to that kind of descriptive title?
Yeah, I purposefully chose not to do any more research into it, which some might say is a good way of justifying laziness, but I thought that it would give me too many preconceptions, and frankly the title alone, I felt, oh right, this is a political prisoner's dream, and it did mean that there were lots of things where I was definitely sort of making a story out of what I could hear and that title. So yes, the fly definitely contributed to it. There was a feeling of helplessness, of something, an outside force wearing me down. In this case, it was the fly. But there were other cases where, you know, you could hear what sounded like distant shouting in a language that I couldn't understand. I mean, I really built up a pretty big story here. So there was I felt that I was in a cell.
Yeah.
And I could hear somebody else being tortured and somebody yelling in a language I didn't understand. Which is, I mean, the amount of stuff I got out of this soundscape.
Yeah.
I struggle to call it music because it did feel very much like drama, to be honest. One of my notes said it felt like it was the first few minutes are very, very intense, and I felt at first that it was like a Hanna-Barbera cartoon falling down the stairs, because there was just a lot of noise and sound effects, and then it sounded to me like a sort of a Radio 4 afternoon drama, but all the dialogue had been taken out. In fact, I think there's a bit on Adam and Joe where they do the Archers with none of the dialogue, and
with
it's just
the
grunting.
Sighs.
And it sort of sounded like, yeah, with all the, oh, oh, of people sort of, farmers taking their boots off. And it sounded like that because it had sort of human noises that weren't speech, but also the sound effects, which, when you listen to radio sound effects in isolation, they sound a bit strange because they have to be so exaggerated to get it across because you don't have the visual. So, yes, it felt to me more like drama than music. And it obviously this is sort of contemporary classical music, and then there's the odd disconnect between the fact that you use the word classical music and then contemporary, and well, classical indicates the past and contemporary is now. So
yeah, it's kind of for want of a better title using contemporary classical music. I think sometimes we use contemporary art music or 20th and 21st century music. It's very... We don't really know where we are.
The the only other one I thought of was you have to say not pop music. It's not pop and it's not jazz. which of course doesn't really help either. But yes, it was completely different to any classical music I ever listened to, because I really like Baroque music. I'm a big fan of John Rutter choral music, the sort of the Cambridge Singers. That's what I go to listen to when I think I want classical music. And this sounds like, if you've ever turned on Radio 3 about 11:30 at night, which sometimes I do because I think, oh, a bit late at night, I'll put on some Radio 3.
And that's when they play the weird stuff.
That's when they play the weird stuff.
That's when I like it.
What's going on? I did this the other night. I came down to make a cup of tea because I couldn't sleep. I thought, I'll just put Radio 3 on while I boil the kettle. And it was sort of yelling and plinky plop.
Also, Stuart McConey on Six Music on a Saturday night does a programme called Freak Zone. Is it Saturday night or Sunday? Where he does a programme called The Freak Zone, which is where he plays all of this kind of stuff. And Stuart McConey really loves it, but they only let him do it, like, late night.
I suppose, does he also do his programme with Mark Radcliffe? Is like the lunchtime show or something. So I can imagine if you're, you know, although it's Six Music, which is the slightly more niche channel, even at lunchtime you think, I probably don't need this. How about some Kasabian?
Yeah. Yeah, and he does. One time I switched on and he was just doing half an hour of Stockhausen, and I was like, yeah, half an hour of Stockhausen. And then
this
I thought,
is great. And everyone else wanted, you know, they wanted to listen to, so out of touch with music, I don't know. Who's a band? St. Vincent. They wanted to listen to some St. Vincent. And they got Stockhausen and didn't know what was happening.
Ah, Stockhausen. One day I'm going to just do a whole series on him. Because he was a nutter, and
just
you watch
a 10-week run.
You watch interviews with him, and he did like ridiculous things. So he was a complete control freak, and he did a helicopter string quartet, where he put each member of the string quartet in a different helicopter and flew them around above the concert hall. And that's part of a cycle called Licht, which doesn't really get performed much because helicopters.
Were they mic'd up and being beamed in?
Yeah.
Oh, right, good, because otherwise I thought, you're not going to hear much if someone's playing a violin.
And then it's mixed with the sound of the rudders. But the great thing was he colour-coded his score and then made each of the performers in the first performance wear the same colour as their colour on the score.
He's mad.
Yes.
He sounds like some kind of unhinged Hitchcock-style control, you know, messing with their minds.
Oh, he definitely was.
Good Lord.
He
is
had
the
so
music
much power.
Good?
I like it, but
is it what you can glean from the last half hour or so? Sorry, from the last half hour or so, what I would call music?
No.
Okay.
But it's really interesting, although it is what I play to the undergraduates if they show up to seminars without having done any work.
Oh, so it's punishment. That's what I always listen to for fun. I think, I'm just going to listen to something that is a punishment. Just flagellate myself when it's just Stockhausen.
It's broadening their horizons music of, you've turned up and not done anything, so we're going to listen to what I want to talk about. Because showing up without any work doesn't mean that I'm going to let you leave early.
Oh no, well that is fair. But it's interesting that's how you think your favourite music should be.
Well, there's also a 90-minute documentary around it, which is just great because you get to see his whole process.
You don't make them listen to that, do you? They've turned up, everyone has to sit and watch the 90-minute documentary.
I watched it. I went as an undergraduate to a screening in the department of that documentary. Yeah, I was really committed. Everyone else was out drinking and I was watching Stockhausen. But yeah. Back to Redbird.
Yes.
We were saying about the political prisoner thing, and I have this really strong memory. The first time I heard this, I had an almost like physical reaction to the torture type sounds.
It's really unpleasant, and that's obviously a good thing if you're trying to have the sound of torture. But I did listen to the second act as well, and that's got some quite sexual noises on it. And yes. I thought, you know, I'm not really having a reaction to this because I've listened to so much vomiting in Act One.
Yeah.
Sort of. Then there was a bit where I thought a pig was being tortured or possibly sort of sexually manipulated in a way. I didn't know what was going on. But there are a lot of sort of... Yeah, there's a very visceral reaction to the noises of the sort of retching and vomiting and
there's one
grunting.
Where it sounds to me like somebody's head being whacked against something hard. And that was the one that was really... Ooh, hated that. But I think... Maybe it's achieved its aim if it's making you hate it so much.
Yeah, it's interesting on that because I did think, well, gosh, I think being a political prisoner must be really terrible listening to that. But I pretty much thought being a political prisoner was really terrible before I listened to it as well. So, yeah, I did have a point there. I think that it does achieve an aim, but I don't know if it's an aim that I personally needed achieving.
Yeah. It's like avoiding watching the news because you know that there's bad stuff going on.
Yeah. And if that was the purpose, was it? Do you know if it was written for a specific purpose or with a specific intent behind it? Because to have that title, it seems... You wouldn't kind of create it by accident, I feel.
I haven't. Though
you might well do.
I haven't really found much about the actual origins. I do have quotes from Trevor Wishart that are on his website, trevorwishart.co.uk, which is pleasingly... You've been on the website, haven't you?
Very briefly. I have not browsed it very much at all.
It's pleasingly 90s.
Oh, yeah. The design-wise is absolutely tremendous. I liked 2002 very much. That's a bit mean. Edit that out.
No, because that's also what his software looks like. So the design of the website is what the software looks like. So it's very nice and homemade looking, and I quite like it. but this is... He doesn't really talk about the actual origins of the piece. He just talks about the sound transformations and that the piece was about... The structure of the piece was based on the transformations between sound types and the techniques for achieving this. He said they were developed on an ad hoc basis through discovering what was practicable with the facilities available in the local analogue studio. That's the studio at York.
Just okay.
Your local analog studio. So they were achieved by combining the elementary studio facilities available, tape editing, mixing, mixer, equalizer, with extended vocal techniques. And he does free vocal improvisations as a performer, Trevor does. So he kind of, those kind of sounds that you got there, you can go to concerts and see him do those live.
Wow.
Which is very unnerving the first time you see it.
Especially if you've counted him as your lecturer before and then he's making all of those noises. Which I think is interesting on this because you like this music and the way he writes about it, it seems very much as a composer's medium. Because as somebody who doesn't compose or manipulate audio in this way, I mean, I edit speech, but that's to make radio as opposed to music, I can see how very interesting it must be for somebody who composes, especially who composes like this. But as a listener with no entry to that, I think, what is going on? Sort of just coming at you. And I can't, although this discussion is making it, I'm getting a lot more from the music now we're talking about it. But you don't have that when you first listen to it, so you can't see how the noises all got there. And now I think, oh, well, that's interesting, because that's this, and you can see how these sounds were manipulated. But at first you just think, what is happening to this animal? Why are all these things? Why is someone being sick?
That's funny as well, because when he does teach, and when you are moving with these processes, he has this real absolute that you have to play the original source material. So you get the opening... I think it uses the free very early on in the first movement. And that's so that the listener can go, that's my original, and that's what all this has been developed from. And then you have to keep on bringing that source material back in. Otherwise people will forget where they've come from.
See, I think that's a very good thing to do, and I can totally see that, but I didn't get that from the piece. I think as the first sound, I'm pretty sure it's someone screaming.
Yes.
And that is a super off-putting start.
Yes.
Oh my god, because I had no idea what this is. You'd said that this would be challenging, and I know I listened to episode one this morning in preparation.
I gave Kim a really nice piece.
Well, that had instruments in. I thought that she'd you know, got the cushy treatment of instruments. We've all heard a clarinet, you say. You're spoiling her. And I thought that was not classical music in the sort of primary school sense of, oh, is it a bit of Mozart type classical music? But I thought, well, I can manage that. I could cope with this bloke. He's in his prisoner of war camp. I can get in there with him, metaphorically. Whereas this, it started with someone screaming. I listened in bed doing my knitting. I don't know if that's the appropriate...
Oh, it's not a good piece to knit to.
Well, I did actually have to keep pulling it back because I missed bits.
Your tension must be really, really tight.
Yeah, it's a tiny wee jumper for a Barbie doll. No. Yes, I thought, is this... am I listening to it in the wrong setting? Tucked up in bed of an afternoon with my knitting. Yes, but the first thing is the scream, and that was so sort of right. Oh, we're here, and there's the yes, as I said, the first few minutes are very content heavy.
Yeah.
Shall we say?
Yeah. Well, trying to think. I think that's partly to do with he was experimenting with what was available.
Yeah, of course.
So if you're trying to see how far you can push it, and also when working with analog tape, everything was really permanent.
Yeah, and I mean, now I know that, because I listened to that and I thought, well, obviously this is the sort of digital, we can all manipulate audio, not to that grand scale, but in the similar way on our phones now, on telephones. So when you think about that, and now you think, hang on, this is all done on tape. I mean, it's so impressive. It really is impressive. And just because I don't like it as noise, as a series of sounds, I don't like it. That doesn't mean that I don't see the skill and can appreciate that element, because that really is very impressive.
Yeah, I think appreciate rather than enjoy.
Yeah, I think it's... Yeah. To be honest, I don't know if your man Trevor himself would say that he enjoys this piece. I don't, you know...
Yeah.
But appreciate, definitely.
I think definitely his stuff now is much more poetic.
Yeah.
The stuff now. I think I will have to have you back on for Encounters in the Republic at a later date, because it's very poetic, and you've got these lovely people in the Northeast just talking about like a time in the pub where their friend dressed up as a woman and all these kind of weird anecdotes. And
And in that one, can you hear a lot more of their speech?
Yes. So you have the entire anecdote, and then he like transforms it and then brings part of the anecdotes back in.
Ah, yeah. See, I think I would really like that. Also, that sounds quite lighthearted. Whereas, as I said, you know, this one, you think, oh, it's political prisoners and now someone's being sick. Oh, you know, I started thinking, should I be setting up a standing order to Amnesty? Is this what... was very amusing is that there is not a long gap of silence after the last noise. There's a bit of gap before it, and there's a sort of kind of buh noise, and immediately, because of the way in which I was listening to it, the voice said, if you'd like Spotify Premium. I thought, what is going on? I didn't know what was happening.
I hadn't even considered Spotify. Like, oh, it ruined so many pieces with those, like,
well, because usually there's a little bit, especially in a long 18 minutes or so, there's a little bit of a, you know, couple of seconds gap. But in this one, it was sort of, blah, Spotify Premium is that... Oh, God. I thought that was part of the soundscape.
That's a piece all in itself. I might just make that piece.
Those are only 12 seconds long, some of these adverts. Lucy, this is your challenge, your music concrète. Spotify Premium adverts.
Well, I did a commission around the Girl Guiding Promise last year. yes. which used entirely recordings of The Promise. So if people don't know, it's the promise that all members make to join Girl Guiding. And we had
it
new
sets
wording.
Out the values of the organisation.
Yeah, and it's
to which we all subscribe.
Commitment to a common standard, and we got new wording of it last year. Was that last year?
No, it must have been 2013 because it was while I was in the office still.
Yeah, so we've had a year and a half. No, over a year and a half. And I had a commission for World Thinking Day, which is the day that we all celebrate being members of Girl Guiding and the World Association of Girl Guides and Girl Scouts. That's snappy when you say
that. No wonder we all call it WAGS most of the time.
Yeah.
Because it's the three G's next to each other. Whenever you're writing it, you think, oh, no, one more.
Yeah, so I sourced recordings of The Promise from across the country, but most of them came from near where I'm from. So they were all these girls with really mank accents going, I promise.
Well, it's quite nice because I think a perception of Girl Guiding is that they all speak like me, dirty southerners. So to have some nice little mank girls doing it.
They were hilarious because it was just like to help other people.
I promise to do my...
And also it was quite sing-songy, so it was nice material to work with because they were all trying to say it at the same time. So you had a really nice shape to work with. But my finest moment from that was I created a whole field of clangers. Just from guides saying The Promise.
Actually, there was a bit in this piece where I thought, these sound like really horrible clangers. Oh, sort of...
Like demon clangers.
Yeah. I've not seen Despicable Me 2, but I'm aware that there are the sort of purple minions that are like the weird minions gone wrong.
Yeah.
Sort of the purple clanger equivalent.
There was also a really nice point around about 11 minutes where it turned into a complete rainforest.
Yeah. You get this sort of first 3 minutes, which is like, you know, all of this noise. You know those keyboards you used to get in school where they have all the different organ settings, and there'll be one which is... like weird sound effect noise.
Yeah.
DJ.
And the joy of dictionary that you can cut it off a bit too early.
Yeah, and there's one, which even though it's a school blimmin' keyboard, is sort of moaning, shall we say.
I remember that one.
So there's that for 3 minutes. It sounds like sort of people hammering at the infinite monkeys, but instead of typewriters, they've got these school keyboards on the audio wingding setting. And then suddenly you get... a lovely rainforest, there's some wind, there's sort of rain, waves, I think, I got at one point.
Yeah.
And then occasionally what sounds like some kind of, what are they, like macaque monkeys. Like, Mah! I think there is a use for this piece, and it's the opposite of whale sound tapes. So maybe for people who have to drive a lot and are worried they'll fall asleep, stick this on. Have you ever seen the film Crank? Where he's got to keep his adrenaline up, Jason Statham as Chef Chelios, or he dies. Maybe if he'd listened to this, he wouldn't have had to put his hand in a waffle iron. Because you think, oh, it's okay, the wave's crashing on the... Ah! What the heck?
In which case, I have a lot of other pieces for him that will really help with that.
Well...
When I was an undergraduate, in our first year, 9 o'clock Monday morning, 2 hours of contemporary music...
That is a wake-up call.
For 2 hours listening to this.
Oh, goodness. Well, I'm sure I once read about a study whereby they were testing, I think it was people on aeroplanes, and whether they could sleep through the various noises of a plane. And they found that if they just, all of the noises and things happen at random, I think you also got repeatedly hit by a trolley going past or something. If they just happened at random... you'd be kept awake. But if they sort of lulled into a pattern, then you could sleep through them because you knew that sort of you'd hear the air condition go whoosh, and then you'd get hit by the trolley, and then a baby would cry wah, and then whoosh, wah, wah, and it just became a sort of rhythm that you could get into and sleep through. And I sort of wanted this to have a rhythm, even if it was weird, So the noises were unpleasant, but there were tiny bits. I think in the second act, well, towards the beginning, there's a thing that repeats. And I thought, oh, repetition. I mean, the noise was horrible. It sounded like, you know, somebody beheading a live chicken or something. I don't know what it was. But I thought, oh, well, this horrible chicken death, that's fine. It's sort of got a nice rhythm. It's on repeat. I can get this. I'm used. This is familiar. This is like music. Whereas in the first act, it never quite got into that. And I think, oh, no. And that was what put me on edge.
Well, that brings an interesting point about form and the structure of the piece. Mm. I would consider this to be in something called moment form, which is something that we are in, well, Karlheinz Stockhausen, again, to bring him up, developed. And moment form is that you can take any moment of the piece and it is of equal importance to any other thing. And that's tiny, like, milliseconds or whole chunks of it. So you can keep on taking snapshots of it and they're all of equal importance.
Okay.
So that's what I would consider this to be, but maybe slightly more structured moments.
I did feel that there was a definite structure, not in some ways overarching, but there were definite bits I'm going to use some musical terminology, almost certainly wrong, but they felt like the movements to a symphony.
Yeah.
Do I mean that? So that there would be a bit like, oh right, this is screaming and animal torture. Okay, we're on to the second movement, wave sounds.
Yeah.
Third act, back to the talk. You know, there was a sort of, you could, it wasn't just 18 minutes of solid madness. There were definite points where you could sort of see how it was being paced.
And I also think there's no, to use a word that always makes me giggle, there's no climax to the piece. It always...
No.
Yeah.
Well, there was, but it was an advert for Spotify, and I don't think that was part of the original score.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think maybe this is a good point for us to take a bit of a break and do our puns. I don't have any snacks with me because you're not... We're conferencing this. We are in separate locations.
Very modern. No, don't worry, because after we've recorded, I'm going to have a scone with cream and jam.
Nice.
That I've got prepared. And I had some simnel cake earlier. These aren't puns, these are just facts.
Yeah, another reason for not having actual snacks with us is we're recording just after Easter. There's a lot of chocolate knocking about.
I think I have diabetes. Just how quickly does it develop? Because if it is 36 hours, then I have got it. I have two puns.
Go on.
Trevor Wish Love Hearts.
Nice.
Or Trevor Wish Art Extra Strong Mints. Like Trebor. Trebor Wish Art. Trevor Extra Strong Mints Wish Art.
Nice.
Yeah?
I went for the title of the piece and I've got Redbird's Custard.
Oh, Jim, I've got a packet of that in the cupboard. Not of use to the listeners at home, but it's always good to know.
Or Red Bird's Eye Chicken Nuggets and Chips.
That's not a snack. That's a meal.
I know.
What snacks are you... Or lasagna, that's a snack. Red Bird... No, I'll get one.
Red Vine Birds.
What's Red Vine?
I don't know. They talk about them in America, but I think they're like those licorice things.
Oh, right. Yes, I know those. Red wine. Again, not a snack, a beverage. But bird. No, I'm out.
I thought I'd have.
I've
more.
Lost my ability to pun.
But
I mean, I'm sure Trebor have more different kinds of mint. There's a seam we can mine.
Do you know? For ages, I didn't realise that Trebor is Robert's backwards.
What? But then mint backwards is tanim, and that doesn't make any sense.
But that's where it came from. It was Robert.
Oh.
Yeah. Mind blown.
I came up with a generic music...
Ooh, always like them.
...one for your baking composers. But I hope... It's so bad. Either... Rock Cakes Maninoff or Rachmaninoff Cakes.
Nice.
Or Baroque Cakes is probably better, but Rachmaninoff made me laugh. And it's fun to say.
It is. I'm trying to think. I just keep on doing things with Chopin. Whenever I buy a pastry, I go, having a Chopin razor.
Oh, that's strong. And of course you have to go Chopin to get it. and you must cook your baroque cakes in your Beethoven oven.
Oh, my housemate always does Beethoven.
Oh, that's very strong.
Yeah.
I'm really struggling. I just want to say Sansultanas. That's not even a good portmanteau, let alone even a Camille Santarens. Santarens is what I was trying to say. Could you please change this to be
Dr.
being, yeah, symphony and sonic screwdrivers. So it's not about anything to do with cake. It's just about Doctor Who villains.
So another thing that I do in this part of the show is to do with my brother's campaign to be a guest. So my brother, Chris Harrison, has started an online campaign to be a guest on the show. So he tweets me and texts me loads of pieces that he thinks he should do on the show. But
do I have to advocate on his behalf in this segment?
Well, this is the segment is Chrissy Yay or Chrissy Nay.
Oh, wow.
So you get a vote. But generally, the pieces that he's sending me are all over the place. The other day, he said I could do the Stone Roses.
Well,
I was like, I don't think you've really...
Also, the guest doesn't get to pick the music. Otherwise, we would have been discussing at least 6 Belle and Sebastian albums in the course of this programme.
That's a different podcast altogether.
That is... that's a one-off special.
Trying to think the other ones that he said he could do. One of them was 19th century. He decided that he could do... Oh, he's decided I should do a Eurovision episode, a Eurovision special of Symphonies and Snacks. Which isn't a terrible idea, because I love the Eurovision.
Yeah, but again, it's not really the classical element.
No. That's what he really...
I could do the advertising jingles of the 1970s, you know.
It was Mahler that he thought he could do.
Yeah, no, I've listened to enough Composer of the Week to vaguely know when some people were born and died. Holst was English. This blows my mind every time I remember
that. He was English?
Yes.
Huh.
Because his name is Holst. And his first name was something like, sounds a bit German, Holst.
Gustav,
yeah, that's not German at all. Gustav Holst is not a name one would expect from an English composer of that time.
True. There's also, because Handel was a German composer who decided that he wanted
just
to be
turned
English.
Up. Oh, I love it here, yeah. Maybe there was a sort of exchange of very different eras.
Yeah. Also, Handel ate an incredible amount. He was just known for being like obese.
Well, back in time, obese people were very rare, so there was I can't remember where it was, but there was somebody in London who was just very fat, and that was their sort of thing, and you'd go and visit them because they were enormously fat, because people weren't fat.
Yeah, Handel was like that.
Imagine having that. You're just thinking, I don't really have a passion in life or a trade. Oh, I know, custard. I'll just...
Yeah.
And I'll write some hallelujah stuff while I'm at it.
We were doing Chrissy Yay or Chrissy Nay. So,
well,
so Chris has decided, he's launched this campaign, he's got himself a hashtag, which is hashtag Chrissy Yay or hashtag Chrissy Nay. If you want to find him on Twitter, he's at ChrissyBabes531, which seems like quite a teenage Twitter handle.
Interesting Twitter handle for a grown man, yes. Is he taking Zayn leaving One Direction well? Is he coping?
We haven't brought it up. He's in Lourdes at the moment.
Oh, no.
I know. He's gone on pilgrimage. That's how badly he's taking it. What else can I tell you about Chris? He is also a York graduate. He studied philosophy and sociology. That's his background. Well. In the land of the ducks.
There are a lot of ducks.
Aren't there more ducks than students? That's what I want to say.
I don't know. There was a rumour that if you were convicted of murder as a student, you were allowed to come and return and complete your degree once you had been let out of prison. But if you killed a duck, you were never allowed back. I don't know if that was true, but it was what we all thought was true.
I think that's fair enough. I mean, they've got golden ducks and everything.
Yes, they have, because they released new ones, because there'd originally been some and they died, and then they put new ones out while I was there.
Have you heard and about the pelicans in Hyde Park?
The pelicans in Hyde Park?
This is one of my favourite...
I know that there
favorite...
are parakeets in St James's Park.
Well, there are pelicans in St James's Park as well, but they were in, I think it was Hyde Park, and my dad told me this story, so I don't know how reliable it is.
Never trust a dad story, that everyone knows.
I mean, a dad's story is what started off the Umiguli tribe. but the pelicans were in Hyde Park and people were feeding the pigeons and the pelicans were going, nice sandwich there, and just eating the pigeons after they'd been fed.
A sort of inside-out sandwich with the bread on the inside and the meat
and
on the outside.
They had to be sent back to the zoo for misbehaving.
Wow. Do you know, I read Roald Dahl's book, The Giraffe, the Pelly and Me, and at no point did Pelly go off and just chow down on a pigeon.
No, Pelly was much nicer than that.
Blimey, Charlie.
So yeah, the big question for you now is, Chrissy Yay or Chrissy Nay, after all that extra information?
There are sides to this debate. One, he is a man of York, as am I, to an extent. But his Twitter handle is not strong. Not strong. and, it, you know, I would say like a 15-year-old girl, but I know a lot of 15-year-old girls with great Twitter handles. I don't know that many. I know like two. Anyway.
Yeah.
but the ultimate thing comes down to the fact that I do a podcast with my sibling, and have done for 3 years.
Yeah.
And so it feels very disingenuous for me to say that you can't do a sibling episode. But then it is up to you. So what's the current voting?
I think we have our last guest, Anna Thomas, voted Chrissy Yay. Kim hasn't given an opinion. She's remained silent on the issue. And we've had 3 Chrissy Yays via Twitter. No Chrissy Nays.
I don't know what, I was going to go yay, but for the interest of balance, I'm going to say nay, because it's your podcast and it is up to you who you have on. And you obviously have a very high standard of guest. So if you're not sure, then can I Chrissy abstain?
Yes.
No. Okay, I'm going to have... We'll have 4 Chrissy A's and 1 Chrissy abstain.
Fair enough. I mean, it does feel slightly like I'm trying to get people involved in a sibling argument.
Yes, and what I have done is I've spoiled my audio ballot paper.
Okay.
because I think that is an issue for siblings to work out themselves. But, you know, I can tell you that sibling podcasts work beautifully well.
Yeah, yours, so Rosie and Jessica's Day of Fun is the podcast that you do with your sister. Do you want to talk a bit about your podcast here as a promotion?
Yes, why not? I'll talk very briefly about it. Rosie and Jessica's Day of Fun is indeed a podcast that my sister and I have been doing for 3 years now. It's very free form, nice chat. We talk about things we've been up to, what we've seen, things we've seen at the theatre, films. Every week we do a top 5, so people suggest subjects and we pick our top 5 on that topic. So we've recently done quiz shows. One of the best ones we ever did was episode 8, where we talked about our top 5 sandwich fillings.
I quite enjoyed soups and stews.
Soups and stews, which I believe you may have suggested.
No, I didn't suggest that one.
Oh, I'm sure somebody said they wanted to hear about soups. It might have been I'd just been eating a lot of soup at the time.
I've suggested top 5 mistakes, like happy accidents.
Yes. And we also have a whole section on things that we make, because we both like baking and cooking and crafting. So as I mentioned, I'm a keen knitter, as is Jessica, and she's also a handy seamstress, crafty sewing person. It's very good fun. I feel like I've never tried to convince anyone to listen before, and it's very comforting. I once had it described as like going out with two friends when you're too tired to contribute to the conversation, so you just sit back and listen. So if you are socially exhausted, why not listen to Rosie and Jessica's Day of Fun?
I see it as it's a cup of tea kind of podcast. Lovely cup of tea and talk about knitting.
Yes, it's not hard hitting, shall we say.
It's a nice one, though.
Well, thank you. I very much enjoy it. And I very much enjoy your show as well, mainly because I'm on it right now. Yes!
Thank you very much. We haven't done Hello to Jason Isaacs.
Yes, we haven't. No, we haven't. That's how you usually construct that sentence. No, hello to Jason Isaacs, Fairport Convention, Stephen Fry, David Morrissey, etc.
Yeah, maybe they're my dream guests. Maybe I could try and convince them on.
How long do you think you will have to keep this going before
I
you become
Kermode.
Big enough to get Kermode, to get old Trot Flappy Hands himself?
I think I need the PhD, and then I can be like, I'm a doctor too.
Yeah, you can be a good doctor.
I'm a doctor of something useless as well. Right, so we've done puns, we've done promoting.
We've done puns, yes.
Do you have any other parts that you want to bring up for Red Bird? Kind of
there was a bit
out.
Where it sounded like Tekken 2 glitching. Like there was just a lot of ha ha noises, and I had a flashback to when my sister and I borrowed our cousin's PlayStation 1 after they got a PlayStation 2, and we played Tekken 3 a lot. Numbers. No, I don't think I have any more to add. I did not like it, but I appreciate a lot of things that went into it.
And did it help to have, because my belief for a lot of contemporary classical music is that it seems as this big inaccessible thing because we don't give people the information around it.
Mm.
So it becomes this exclusive members club because you need all this information and it's kind of presumed that you should know it already and nobody ever explains it to you. Like when to clap.
Oh, I know. They should have a sign. Well, I have got a lot out of this conversation. My sort of gut reaction to the piece hasn't really changed, but I feel differently about it to when I first listened to it a couple of hours ago, and I thought, this is the worst. Lucy hates me. She's trying to break up with me. And so this conversation has been really interesting. It's been stimulating. I feel differently about the piece. But although I do agree with you that we shouldn't allow things to become private clubs, I think that art should be able to be appreciated without having to have lots of background information, to an extent.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think everything should just be, I don't think everything's for everybody. I do think everything is for everybody who wants to have it. But I think to me, the idea of creating something which you have to have a 45-minute discussion about afterwards to get anything from it that's not sort of a visceral, intense disdain,
yeah,
is not as for the art I produce. I would shy away from that quite strongly. I wouldn't write something where afterwards I have to explain what it is.
Yeah, are the expectations of writing and music very different in that respect?
I expect so. I think writing you can take at your own pace for a start. As a reader, speaking as the audience for it, you know, music comes at you in the time in which it's record. You know, a recording is 5 minutes. You've got 5 minutes to listen to it. Whereas if a poem is 12 lines long, if it takes you an hour to get through those 12 lines, well, it takes you an hour to get through those 12 lines. And
yeah.
So in that, yes, it is different, I suppose. And I think also music is so ubiquitous. And people who don't read, for there are lots of non-readers in this world are familiar with music more. I think more people have a baseline familiarity with music than they perhaps do with literature. I don't know if this is just some gross sweeping statement that is, of course, you know, wildly incorrect. But I think so with music, people feel that they have some grip on it, and that means that, you know, I don't know anything about contemporary classical music, but I do know about tunes. And I think, I know about music, and I can't get into this is a sort of a zorb full of people with little Moog synthesizers I can't get into.
Yeah, I think in a way with music that hasn't happened, probably generalizing a lot with literature, is we've created these little colonies of, it's how you define yourself, and keeping other people out of it is part of what people think makes it special.
Okay.
And I think that happens not just in contemporary classical, but, you know, like that kind of hipster thing of, I liked them before they were cool.
Absolutely. And I think that there is that in literature, but I suppose, actually, is that the difference between popular music and this kind of contemporary classical, and then you get the sort of, it is in some ways comparable to popular literature, and then there are definitely little refined, self-selecting elites in literature, no doubt.
Yeah.
But I suspect, I don't know, I don't really know where that point is going to go, but I do feel,
I think there's no need for it as well. So right,
no, there's absolutely no need for these kind of elitism in any art.
Right at the top of the episode,
did everyone not like what I like? Because I like it, thank you.
Right at the top of the episode, you said about Rutter, who wrote very, he writes very accessible, very very melodic, lots of choral things, the kind of stuff you do at school. And one of the worst things I heard as an undergraduate was another student say, "Oh, Rutter, music for the masses."
Quite a good pun, though.
Yeah,
because he does write music one might sing at mass.
But it made me so angry, because there's no need for us to make these factions and to talk like that about, you know, the masses. And that's part of the reason why I'm doing this, is I think everything should be accessible to everyone.
Isn't it better that people listen to, say, Rutter, if you like classical music, and you, or say you like this, your man Trevor here, or any kind of classical music, wouldn't you rather people listen to Rutter, which is the kind of, I fully admit, quite mainstream classical music, than didn't listen to it at all, or shunned it, or listened to something really awful? I mean, I would rather people read books that are kind of trashy than didn't read.
Yeah.
Because I think I really value reading.
Yeah. I think there's just so much to explore that there's no need to write off anything in terms of music. Even down to, you know, pop music, everything has a value, and I can appreciate it all as long as it's not lazy.
See, this raises the question of, I think every genre has good things in it, but not every song is, you know, not everything is good. But there is value, you know, there is value in pop music, but not in all pop music.
Like, I feel like I bring up Taylor Swift a lot. But listening to 1989.
Yes. I've been listening to that so much recently.
Well, first
like every
of all,
day.
I look at it and I go, I've achieved nothing.
Oh, it's really bad being born in that year now.
Yeah.
I just think, what have I got?
Yeah, she's ruined our year of birth. Because we were also the year the World Wide Web was invented.
The Berlin Wall came down.
Berlin Wall came down. I think the Game Boy was released.
Yes, that was 89.
So it's a great year. And then Taylor Swift ruined it by just making us look at our lives and go, I've done nothing.
I've done nothing.
But I think those are really well thought out pop tracks. And she's worked really, they're really well crafted.
Oh, absolutely.
And they're not lazy. But then I hear other stuff like, oh, I'm going to do the cardinal sin of slacking off One Direction now. But there's that cover that they do of One Way or Another and Teenage Kicks. And it's so cynical and so lazy that I've got no time for it. Because it's like someone's gone, this is how we can make the most money for the least effort.
Mm.
And I think that exists in all genre and all styles of music. So in contemporary classical, you listen to some stuff and it's like, well, you're just being pretentious.
Yeah.
And then there's other stuff that's experimenting and really well crafted. And I would put Redbird in the experimenting, well crafted box, in that it's trying new things.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I mean, because I'm not familiar enough with other works of this type, I'm happy to be led by you, but I can completely see that there is a lot going here and there is no lack of effort.
Yes.
Or creativity behind it.
Yeah.
And I think that that's the important thing, is that if people are producing works in any art where they are putting love and effort and creativity and inspiration into it, then that is important. And up with that stuff that genuinely I think is rubbish, there is very little that I think is truly awful, but it does tend to be, you're right, the sort of cash in, the sort of tawdry plastic style.
I think there's a very good book which kind of addresses some of these issues, which is called Fear of Music, which is by David Stubbs, which is why people are more forgiving of contemporary art than contemporary classical music. So we'll happily look at a Rothko, but we won't listen to Stockhausen, which does address some of these things, and that might be a place to go for further on that. I have to say, there are a lot of typos in my edition, which did put me off. But there's good points raised. Yeah, so I think that's about all we have time for today. You can follow the show at Symphony Snack on Twitter. It's mainly baking puns that seems to happen on there, and Chris's attempt to be on the show. That's what we're tweeting at the moment. Rosie, can people follow you on Twitter?
They absolutely can. You can follow me at Rosie at Large, and you can follow my podcast at The Day of Fun Show, because at Rosie and Jessica was taken by somebody who never tweets.
Damn them.
Yeah.
I'm also on Twitter at LA Harrison Music, where I tweet about composition, baking, and brownies. Not the baking sort, the small children sort. At the moment, they've been doing Taylor Swift music videos. It's been very amusing to watch them do it.
Which songs are appropriate for brownies?
All of Taylor Swift. Although it is quite funny to hear them sing Got a Long List of Ex-Lovers.
That's exactly the line I was about to say. I don't know if 8-year-olds should say they've got a lot of ex-lovers.
Well, it's more appropriate than, what's the, Uptown Funk Gonna Funk You Up.
Oh my.
Yeah. You have to be careful with brownies.
Oh gosh, you do.
Thank you for listening. This is Symphonies and Snacks, and here is more of the Trevor Wishart Redbird to see us out. Thank you.